116.
Actually, no, I lie. Hold on, fuck. What the fuck?
Like trivia all over again.
116. You right.
116? For real?
Jeez. Are you right? Are you sure? You're gonna fuck up our numbers?
You gonna fuck up our numbers?
Nope. It will not.
We'll fuck up our numbers.
116.
116. Oh, welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I am your host, Patrick Schmaltz.
Keep going.
With my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Hi.
and my other brother, Andrew Schmaltz. Hello, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. Bonjour.
Bonjour. We
none
are brothers,
of us speak
we
fucking
are
geeks.
Wait. You got French out of that?
French.
I got French.
This is French. This is my French accent.
Totally... All right. I need listeners to comment. That was totally Italian to start.
It's it was I'm not fucking French. They're both romance languages. I'm sorry that I have a terrible accent.
Totally not French.
Oh my god, I got French out of that. That's hilarious.
Totally not French at the
Let's
beginning.
Let's drink some wine. Is that helping?
Listeners, I need your commentary.
I'm sorry.
You know, I'm just doing
Italian.
This for fun. If anybody's offended by these voices, I apologize. They're fun.
Also, if you're offended, fuck off down the road. We got to watch.
Why would you be offended?
Fuck off down
that.
The road.
yes.
I'm Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers, Christopher and Andrew Schmaltz. We're brothers with geeks. We talk about geeky things. Welcome to the podcast. It's 116.
It's been so
Hi,
long,
guys.
My brothers. I love you guys. It's how are you doing?
We love you two so much. I am doing well. It is hot as blazes here in Phoenix,
how was
Arizona.
Your trip to Tahoe, Andrew?
Dude, trip to Tahoe was a lot of fun. Tahoe is a very cool place. Beautiful. I mean, pine trees.
I was recently there for a thing related to my job, and it is stunningly beautiful.
Yeah, no, and beautiful, huge freshwater lake, beautiful blue water.
You go swimming and shit?
I got in the water. The water was cold.
Freezing cold.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of snow runoff.
A lot of snow runoff. Okay. But the weather was perfect. There was barely any humidity. The high during the day was like 80 degrees. It was tolerable even to sit in the sun. So it was,
it got up to 95 here yesterday.
That's
we
wild.
Went floating yesterday because
Tucson set a record today. I think Phoenix did too.
Phoenix was like 115 today, I think.
Yeah. Tucson's record today was 109.
On a very basic level, it was just nice to get out of the heat for 2 days, 3 days.
Yeah.
How was
I read something,
Christopher
I read
and his
something
family?
Today that basically 2030, they're saying that like everything's going to be effed and we're going to have like a mini little ice age for like 10 years.
Yeah.
That's possible. What I read.
F's in the chat.
It's like, all right, great.
There's a lot, global warming. It's real.
Global warming is real.
Yeah.
And caused by humans.
And caused by humans.
And
not,
in my opinion, totally solvable by humans, too. We just need people to figure it out.
Great. So.
Hold on. Yeah. Christopher was in San Diego.
He went to San Diego.
The contingent of Arizona Schmaltzes. Minus myself, we're in San Diego.
Don't say the name of the hotel because we don't want our listeners to.
I will not say the name of the hotel because it's a guarded secret, and we've been going there for 20 plus years, and it's phenomenal. And so I will not talk about it. But it is. It continues to be awesome, except they closed the lower patio, dudes, because. Half of it fell into the sea.
Whoa!
Oh my god!
No kidding.
Yes.
Do you have pictures of the rubble?
I, in fact, did not take pictures because I was depressed about it.
Yeah.
We could not go down to that patio that's like
hanging
over
the water.
Cliff, over the water.
Yeah.
Because it is unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, But it's always a good time. San Diego's a beautiful place. I love it very much. We went to the beach for part of a day. The girls had a good time. It wasn't too hot. It was cloudy and foggy and cool in the morning. The breeze, I was actually cold.
That's what you want.
That's what you want. Wonderful.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, cool. And so we just chilled out. We stayed and walked around where we were and enjoy the neighborhood very much. We love that part of town. We went to Seaport Village with the whole crew and had some seafood, and that was nice. Cool.
What's your favorite little restaurant over in that little strip? What's that? What's your spot?
I like the we are recurrent customers of the Thai place.
Oh yeah,
we like the Thai place a lot.
I think we had that the last time we were there.
I had a breakfast. I had a breakfast burrito on a place that was just up the street that was phenomenal.
What was it called? Because I had a breakfast burrito after my run that one morning.
Sunny's.
Yes, that place is bomb. If you live in San Diego, go eat at Sunny's.
That place is bomb.
Yeah,
the breakfast burrito
was $6,
killer.
Right? It was like
it was dirt cheap. I mean, the Supreme is $8, and it has everything and everything you want, and it's awesome. So
that's awesome. That's cool.
Love food. Love it.
Yep.
Yeah, I was a little
disappointed. We had a good time.
I was a little disappointed that I couldn't go on the trip just because I mean, literally I have no plans for this entire year to travel at all, except this past weekend. And this was the weekend the family planned to go to San Diego. And I had already made plans to go to Tahoe with friends. I'd like had bought tickets and committed to, you know, spending money on a place to stay. So yeah, I was disappointed. I couldn't like go on the, you know, kind of regular trip to San Diego, but you know, life's full of choices.
These
so
things
life's
work, full of choices. Yeah. You tweeted out that you were $60 up.
Yeah,
did
I went
that,
to the.
Did that
I was at the,
or,
oh no, I left in the hole. the craps. I would. We were.
That's how they build all their big buildings, dude.
Have you ever walked out of a casino making money? I've never walked out making money. So I think I've sworn off casinos for my life. Like I don't need.
I have so much fun. I mean, it's never fun to lose money, of course. But
yeah,
I only play craps. I don't play blackjack. I don't play slots. I don't play roulette. I play craps because it's the most entertaining game to play.
I agree.
So I don't lose money any other way. If I go in and I'm playing craps, and you can lose money very quickly.
You can lose money very
significant
quickly.
Amount of money on the table at any given time. It's not like you just have, you know, your one $10 bet.
You go up and then suddenly you got $100 in different spots all over the board.
And then you crap out and it's gone.
Yep.
So the first day I was at one place and the craps table was hot. That's when I left up $60 and then went to another place on the second night. And that craps table was totally cold. It would be, you know, it'd be a few rolls of not winning any money and pushing bets and things like that. And then we crap out. So it became.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's gambling.
I'm familiar with that process. Yes.
Yeah. It's gambling, you know, and I haven't gambled in since we went for your bachelor party, Patrick. Whoa. Is the last time I've really played craps.
That's,
I haven't been to Vegas
since. A long time.
Yeah. Wow. Over 10 years. So you know, losing $110 or whatever I did, I think I left down like $100.
Dude.
But I mean,
that's terrible. Not terrible.
I mean, that's built into, you know, it's built into the fun. You win some, you lose some. So, that's part of the attraction of Tahoe is that you're on the California side and you're on the Nevada side, and Nevada has gambling. So we went down to the Nevada side and gambled a little bit both days. And one day,
what part of the lake were you staying in?
We stayed in a place called Incline Village.
Okay. Mm.
It's on the northern part. It's just south of Truckee.
That's where my conference was, dude, in that hotel that's there.
The Hyatt?
Yes.
Yeah, I gambled there.
No kidding.
The first day we were there, we flew in, we got some dinner, and then the first day we...
$20 million houses in this location.
Oh, yeah. No, we found one place.
Numbers.
A lot of my friends are in the mortgage industry and are realtors and you know, investigate properties and stuff like that. And we're up and down that State Route 28 that's on the...
That's the north shore of Tahoe.
Then there was a mansion for sale for $75 million.
Whew. Nice.
Right on the water. 8 bedrooms. Nice. Yeah, gigantic place. We were down at the Hyatt on the first day. We went down to the Hyatt bar and we were on the beach for a little bit, just kind of having some drinks.
It's a great spot.
Yeah, gambled at the craps table at the Hyatt that first afternoon. So it was fun. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Beautiful spot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Patrick, what's been up with you? What have you been doing?
Yeah,
making
man.
Movies, well, making stuff? Well, I've been working on a TV show for Hulu called Shrill Season 2. Yes. Working on that a little bit. That. And then I went camping last weekend with John Michael and Chris Ryan. That was a lot of fun. And I went floating this weekend with Jay and Chris Ryan, some other guys. It was a lot of fun.
What is
it
that?
Was really hot.
Down the river, like down the
floating?
Yeah, you take like tubes and you start
tubing. Yeah. Like, salt river tubing. We have salt river tubing here. Yeah.
Loading.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Floating.
You call it floating in Oregon?
We call it floating.
Yeah, we call it tubing. Going
on very, it's very literal.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else would you call it? You go swimming,
tubing?
You go swim.
Tubing.
Tubing.
Nah.
Float. Nah. Okay.
It was fun. Yeah. I'm recovering today because it's like sunshine and
drinking and
I'm very pale.
Shenanigans.
And so, yes. And a little hungover from day drinking all day. So it's like a 5-hour experience. You
These
know?
Things happen. Yeah,
they do happen. But as long as you're doing it,
good times were had by
Summer
all. So
experience. And you're working on
I went
your
for
show.
A run today and I feel like. That was like the worst run ever. My feet fell like bricks.
I ran in San Diego and it was the best run I've had in a long time. I was,
oh, wow.
It was quick and my ankle felt great. So yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Even with like the heavy sea air.
Yeah. I'm
okay. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. It was really good. Yeah,
I'm doing a 5K with Chris Ryan and Jay actually. Jay, we're trying to get Jay in shape. But 5K on August 17th. So I can go into that. So I'm training for that.
Very nice.
That's cool.
It's been a while since I've done a run. So I'm working. I can definitely do. I did a 5K today. No problem. It just, you know, I want to actually go fast and be competitive. So that's what I'm working towards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Been watching lots of movies, lots of summer movies.
Yeah, what have
movies.
You like, seen? There's been lots of stuff.
Well, like things that we wouldn't really talk on this podcast are like, I saw Hobbs and Shaw yesterday, which I won't like ruin for anybody, but it's exactly what you would imagine. And
from
like,
a Fast and Furious movie starring.
It's just like a self-licking ice cream cone, to quote my best friend, Chris Ryan. It just ridiculous, but it did have like this, like to call it a teaser is pretty ridiculous, but it had a teaser for Tenet, which is the new Christopher Nolan movie. It's basically like two shots and some words on the screen and a little music. It's nothing else. And it says Christopher Nolan, written and directed
so
by Christopher Nolan.
My
nothing
impression
else. It's
of
not
the trailer,
online.
My impression from the trailer for Hobbs and Shaw is they are going full on science fiction superhero.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like the same way that like everything's pumped up. Idris Elba has been like augmented by technology.
Okay.
There's lots of like he's been like jacked on all kinds of stuff to make him Black Superman, to quote him.
Yeah, I heard that
in the trailer. And so it's like sort of, it's not like full on science fiction, but it's sort of.
Is it done in a interesting way such that I'm not going to watch? And
there's a lot of hand waving.
There's a lot of hand waving.
It's like, oh yeah, he's just a superpowered dude. He's got that. He's got a transformer freaking motorcycle. Just hand wave at that. They all have guns that you need like a special glove to fire. Just hand wave at that. Just like, okay.
And then they take it old school on the island.
Okay, so I want...
All this is just based upon my view of the trailer.
The trailer.
No spoiler.
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil anything,
no
but
spoilers.
Like, what that comes up, it's the self-licking ice cream cone part is like, they create a problem and they solve the problem that they created. You know what I'm saying? The script...
I'm still trying to get my brain around the self-licking ice cream cone metaphor, because that doesn't make any sense.
It makes total sense.
No, it doesn't.
So it's an ice cream cone with its own tongue, and it's just...
doesn't make any sense, dude. So,
tell that to Chris Ryan. You're on Chris Ryan's shit list now, Chris.
I don't give a shit.
The
metaphor makes no sense. Sorry.
Okay, here's the question, Patrick. The movie was, I assume, at least 2 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
Did you enjoy it yourself, and do you regret spending the money?
No. Like,
no, you did not enjoy yourself, and you regret it.
Yeah, it was just sort of like,
did you see it in a matinee?
These shouldn't be difficult questions to ask. Either you had a good reaction to the movie, or you didn't.
I saw a 6 o'clock movie. Yeah.
Okay.
So you paid full price.
Good reaction to the movie, or you didn't? Yes or no?
I did not like the movie. I never need to watch it again.
Okay. There you go.
Simple. It's just like. It's fun.
Andrew and I will see it, and we'll talk about it.
It's popcorn fun for sure, but it's stupid.
There's popcorn fun, and then there's idiotic.
This is idiotic.
Trying too hard. Popcorn fun.
They're trying real hard. They want you to think this is funny and fun for sure. They think they're having a good old time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just was like, I just did, I know I'm supposed to like check my brain for these kind of movies, but it's just like, I can see through it too much. It's just, I didn't enjoy what I was given.
There's a line where that stuff is awesome.
Yeah.
This is Deadpool, right? Deadpool is the prime example of there's a line where you get up to it and it's perfectly delivered and you do not cross the line. In terms of, trying way too hard to be cool.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so tropey. It's ridiculous. You don't even have to know the movie. Like, I'm not revealing anything. It's like they hate each other in their beginning, but they have to like band together to beat the bad guy finally.
Like, but that can be fun if it's handled well, and it sounds like it wasn't.
It's just so like
Statham and The Rock though are totally watchable, and
it's such a 100%. The movie acts like it's such a surprise that they figured that out. Like, if we work together, we can win. It's like, okay.
How badass is Vanessa Kirby?
Oh, she gets a not ugly word for this episode.
Here, here.
Yeah, Vanessa Kirby is the shit.
She's worth the price of the ticket alone.
Right on.
Yeah.
She's hot.
Well, I heard she stomps ass, too.
Stomps ass.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chris and I will see the movie.
She was in Rogue Nation?
She was in Fallout. She plays Fallout. The White Widow.
Fallout. That's right, Fallout.
Dude, I need to watch Fallout again. That's a good one.
Vanessa Kirby also plays Princess
Biceps.
She plays what?
What's his name? Henry Cavill cocking his biceps.
Yeah, cock his arms in this.
Awesome.
Vanessa Kirby also played Princess Anne in the first two seasons of The Queen. Like, they're doing a time jump for The Queen. I love The Queen on Netflix, but she had that role, and she's
Watched. I watched the first episode of that and I fell asleep during it. So, you know,
no, man, I just don't
have the attention span for that shit.
I don't know. Maybe you don't.
Maybe I don't. Anyways, what else? Oh, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Did anybody see that?
I saw it.
No, I have not seen it.
Spoiler free review. What'd you think, Andrew?
I am behind. Yeah. Spoiler free, please.
Spoiler free review. I loved it.
Mm.
I enjoyed it. And I'm still chewing on what I think Quentin Tarantino was trying to do with the movie. It's definitely part of his alternate history kind of phase that he's been in with, you know, Django and with
Inglourious Basterds.
Inglourious Bastards. Mm-hmm. Definitely fits squarely into that.
He's definitely steering into like, I'm going to rewrite history for the way I want it to be. And he keeps doing that. It's like, fine.
the movie is has much. I mean, I think it has as much plot as Hateful Eight. I mean, Hateful Eight had kind of a common thread, but I mean, you're sitting in this one room for 2.5-3 hours with characters talking to each other and all the tension that goes on.
I love Hateful Eight.
I'm one of the people that loved Hateful Eight.
Like, yeah, I'm at the other end. I did not enjoy Hateful Eight that much.
I loved it.
I love this movie. Like, DiCaprio's freaking great. Brad Pitt he gets the Co Not Ugly Award. That man is like 55 years old and he has aged into himself.
Yeah,
he looks so good. Fantastic.
That dude is
okay.
Amazing.
So everything you just said, Andrew, I completely agree with. Really good writing, really good shots, really good acting. All the characters are great. Everybody's perfectly cast. So fun to watch. Entertaining as hell. No plot. If you don't know the Charles Manson murders, you're completely lost.
Yep.
It doesn't give you anything.
You have to have an innate knowledge of Charles Manson and the Manson family and who Sharon Tate is. You have to have some knowledge
to give a shit at all. Otherwise, you have no idea what's going on. There's no plot whatsoever. It's just these guys' lives in this middle. And it's just
a really well done movie.
Right.
Yeah. He's in love with his time in Hollywood. It's a love letter to that time in Hollywood.
Totally.
And he wishes that things turned out differently.
But it's like, I love that time and I love what he's trying to do, but this is not my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie whatsoever. Like, it's fun to watch and I definitely watch it again. But
this is a good interesting question though that I don't know if we've ever talked about. What's your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie? What's your top 2 or 3 Tarantino movie? Because Tarantino is a very unique filmmaker. I mean, he has his own style, his own
interests. I'll give you my favorite and my least favorite. My least favorite is controversial because everybody loves it. Favorite is Pulp Fiction, absolutely. Pulp Fiction is what made me want to be in, like, make movies. Pulp Fiction's revelatory, sure. Yeah, it just changed film for me. Yeah. My least favorite, Inglourious Basterds. I thought that was a mess.
Okay.
Totally, they had amazing scenes, and everybody talks about those scenes, but that thing's pacing is totally off, and it's a hot mess.
Okay.
So,
Christopher?
Anyways. My favorite is definitely Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Yeah, that movie is incredible.
Perfect. It's perfect.
It is. It is amazing. And my least favorite, I think, is Django.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Django's kind of weak.
I think it's Django. We don't have to get into it, but it's my least favorite for a variety of reasons.
It's really offensive. It's hard to watch. It's not fun.
Well, it's not fun, and I don't know if Tarantino's the guy to make that.
I can see that argument.
Yeah.
I
think that's the one I'm the least the fan of. So.
Okay. Yeah. I think my favorite honestly might be Kill Bill Volume 1.
Woo,
I mean,
it's a close number two.
He considers Kill Bill one film for him, and I think I can see that argument, and I understand why he would break it into two parts. There's just so much story there that he wanted to tell. Yeah. I find the first part better than the second. In a lot of ways, I just find it to be, it feels very different to me.
Would release that today, he would do a four hour long movie. They were so afraid of that shit when he released that.
He would definitely release it. It would be 3 hours and 45 minutes. It would be released as one film, Kill Bill, and it would be 3 hours and 45 minutes.
You know they're going to do that in the 25-year retrospective.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to do a tour of that on 70mm.
And I would totally sit in a theater and watch those two back-to-back.
Of course.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
To complete the circle, I think my least favorite is Hateful Eight.
Really?
I mean, it's beautiful. Like, I just...
You would watch Jackie Brown over... Hateful Eight.
I would.
Jackie Brown is good, man.
It just didn't suck me in.
Jackie Brown was so boring.
I didn't find the characters engaging. I mean, there's so many characters in that you know, when they're at Minnie's Haberdashery or whatever it is, like, I just wasn't as interested in them as Quentin Tarantino clearly was.
Oh, yeah.
Telling their stories. I mean, one or two of them I found interesting, but on a whole, I wasn't engaged in the movie as much as you needed to be to sit there and watch these eight people talk for 3 hours.
I mean, it's a complicated movie to do well, for four hours.
It's a valid perspective for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have the 4 hour long version on Netflix and I watched it. It's actually, I think I saw that when I went to see the 70 millimeter one. I went to see the 70 millimeter one here in Portland and they gave me a book and I think it was the 4 hour long version.
I just recently watched Reservoir Dogs again.
Oh yeah.
That movie, great movie stylistically, and what he does in terms of art is really, you can see all of his technique and style and sort of it's really for
a film, it's pretty incredible.
Difficult to watch. Also, there are portions of it are difficult to watch, but damn, is that good. So good.
Speaking of rewatches, didn't you rewatch a movie, Andrew?
I did. That was the piece of news that would have been a better segue. We should be better about this. But Rutger Hauer passed away.
Did that trigger your attendance to this? Well, to the thing Harkins, you're going to talk about, or
Rutger Hauer died, and Harkins, as a in memoriam type of thing, as a celebration of his work, they shown the final cut of Blade Runner in some theaters around Phoenix for 3 days. He died on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday. And they're like, this coming weekend, we're going to have special showings of Blade Runner, the final cut at these four theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was like 10 shows in three or four days at a couple of days.
What's the main difference between the theatrical cut and the final cut? Because I think I've seen the director's cut.
There's so many freaking cuts that I can't.
No voiceover is the main difference.
Yeah, the final cut has no voiceover.
No voiceover at the end.
They remove some footage. They shorten some shots, I think.
And it ends with Harrison Ford being a replicant, right?
No.
No, that is a totally open question in every version.
Absolutely. It is not overt at all, dude.
That's not overt at all.
The point.
Shut the fuck up. Unicorns. Let him finish, Patrick.
You're wrong, Patrick.
Shut the fuck up. The theatrical cut ends with that long kind of shot of the vehicle like driving north out of the city into like the green part
on the coastline.
Yeah, that is the end.
Totally different from the tone of the whole rest of the movie.
Exactly. Yes. The final cut ends with Deckard and Rachel getting into the elevator outside Deckard's apartment and leaving. There's no long sweeping shot of them driving out on the coast or any kind of voiceover.
The theatrical cut ends with a drive.
The final cut, the coastline. The final cut ends with them just leaving his apartment together.
Yeah.
And with Deckard, no voiceover. And Deckard finding the little origami unicorn. Showing that
Garf knows his dreams because he's a replicant.
Or it's a coincidence, or they're implying that that's a possibility.
How does he know what he's dreaming about, guys?
He doesn't know.
That's why he left a unicorn.
Not at all. Dude, you're part of that uber nerd section of the internet that thinks it's not what it is.
Totally not a replicant.
Well, it doesn't matter because in Blade Runner 2049, they confirm that he's a human because he ages. So
Yeah. Sorry, your theory is wrong, Patrick.
It's wrong, Patrick.
Fine.
Anyway, I had never seen
the final cut is vastly better.
Vastly. But I had never seen that version. I had only seen the version, the director's cut, which is a little bit longer and has Harrison Ford's widely kind of maligned voiceover.
The director's cut has the voiceover?
Yeah. Yes, the final cut does not.
So I've definitely seen it without them.
Yeah, I found the final cut much more engaging.
Mm.
And I know enough about the movie, about the lore surrounding the movie, that Patrick is convinced is true, but actually isn't. And concerning all the versions and all that shit, like, I knew enough about it going into it. I found not having the Harrison Ford voiceover to be a positive removal from the film experience.
Well, it makes it very like on the nose film noir. Like,
it really does. And it's still, there's still so much hard-boiled detective film noir version in this future. It doesn't need the voice.
Well,
just let the world exist as it is. And
part of the rejection of the voiceover too is it seems really bad. Like, the actual Harrison Ford's reading of it is kind of just,
okay, that's why it's maligned. It's like, you don't really get the sense that Harrison Ford wanted.
If they did a better job, that might have gone over better. Because I love narration movies.
I enjoy voiceover
detective story. Yeah, that kind of detective.
There's definitely a place for it, but tonally, it was totally wrong for the end of the movie. Well, you don't need explanation.
You don't.
I think it's not noir. I think it's the opposite of noir because it's trying to explain.
Right.
And without it, it is 100% squarely noir. And I love that.
Well, here's the thing is if you're doing narration because you need it to like fill in gaps or explain shit,
right?
Because your story's weak, then there's something wrong with your story. But if you're like, if you don't need it and it exists without it, then why do it?
Yep. Well, if it works, and it's a simple thing that if it works, it works. And just like, think of Shawshank. Can you imagine that movie without Morgan Freeman's voiceover?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Like, told from his perspective?
No.
You cannot, because it adds a level to the movie that makes it vastly superior. It's incredible.
Because the writing is amazing.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think Denis Villeneuve, who has become part of our kind of, you know, saintly kind of filmmaker,
auteurs. Exactly. Auteurs of our generation.
Well, I think specifically for this podcast, we've got guys that we always trust their choices. Chris Nolan, Michael Mann. I think we always are going to trust Denis Villeneuve.
Yep.
So
David Fincher.
Blade Runner 2049 did not have voiceover at all. Mm-hmm. It was just the world, the way it was. It was more complicated. The world in 2049 actually builds on the world from the original Blade Runner. It makes it more complex, more kind of.
Did you watch 2049? Right?
No, I didn't. I didn't have time. I got caught up.
That's a 2.5 hour movie. 2.5 hour movie too, isn't it?
It's close to three. Blade Runner the Final Cut is 2 hours.
Oh,
it is not as long as people think it is. It is 2 hours. Yeah. It is a tight 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's that scene at the end with Rutger Hauer is a top 10 scene in movies of all time in my list.
He ad-libbed the last scene. He ad-libbed.
Yeah. Awesome. The recurring theme in this podcast that we constantly bring up every time we watch superior level science fiction is, you know, the best science fiction makes us think about what it actually means to be human. And of course, Blade Runner does that. I mean, it was kind of, you know, let's take this straightforward kind of film noir. You know, the plot of the movie is pretty straightforward. Deckard is hunting for these robots on Earth.
Because they're murderers.
That's another thing that people forget. They have literally committed no crime.
No crime.
They other end than up committing crime being who AWOL. They are. Yeah, they are AWOL.
They're AWOL.
Hold on. They say in the movie that they like murder people on the moon or something?
It is illegal for them to exist on Earth at all. So he has a kill order on them. Regardless of what they're doing, it's not like we're suspecting them of committing these crimes or they did these things. The fact that they're on Earth, you are allowed to kill them. You are required to kill them by law. So there is no due process.
I mean, that shit's great. It's so interesting. Great.
So
how was it on the big screen?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, I bet it
was. Visuals still hold up.
To this day, the visuals hold up.
Well, because you know what it is? They used to make models. They made models of all that shit.
Well, and Denis Villeneuve did that for Blade Runner 2049.
Mm-hmm. It looks different. Star Trek, for me, still holds up because the ships are models. They're not computer-generated stuff. They add computer stuff to help it out, but it still looks good because they built a freaking ship, you know? Yeah.
No, yep. I mean, things are getting so... I mean, we know there's so much in, you know, Endgame. There's so much in the Marvel movies. There's so much in the... even in the sequel trilogy that is completely computer-generated. But if it's done well, it looks amazing. So mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be one or the other in terms of how good things look on the big screen. But the movie was made in 1980. It was released in 1981 or 1982. But it still looks amazing and still holds up. It's great. So that experience of seeing the film in the theater, which I'd never seen before, well worth it.
Cut in the theater.
You ever have the opportunity to see Blade Runner in the theater, freaking go, man.
I love seeing movies in the theater that like I only saw when I was a kid on like a TV, a small
exactly.
television.
That was why I wanted to have that experience.
I had that experience with 2001 in 70mm last year.
Yeah, dude, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Awesome. I feel like so we haven't talked about Spider-Man Far From Home.
Released a couple months ago.
Not even a couple months, like a month ago, right?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I've seen it twice. I enjoyed it both times. Yeah.
I have also seen it. Yes.
Should we do like a spoiler version?
Sure. I think we've had enough time.
Yeah, it's been long enough.
Definitely long enough. Yeah.
All right. If you haven't seen Spider-Man and you're worried about spoilers, turn it off for like 10 minutes or something. Come back. If not, you don't care. Stay here. On with the spoilers. So this
here's
is like
my
the first movie.
Go ahead.
This is the first movie after Endgame. And they released a trailer for this before Endgame had come out. So Spider-Man was obviously going to survive, which I think was like a mistake on Marvel's part, because it was like, well, duh, he's going to come back. But, I mean, what did you guys think of this movie?
I enjoyed it. I don't have any. Right? Yeah, I mean, I think Tom Holland as Peter Parker is great. I thought that Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio, he was a lot of fun to watch.
Jake Gyllenhaal was so good.
Yeah, I actually the standout for me, I think, actually might be Zendaya as Mary Jane as MJ. She is a movie star. She has kind of indefinable kind of watchability.
Yep.
And she has this kind of.
Have you guys been watching Euphoria on HBO?
No, I have not.
Dude, that show is effed, but she's so good in it. She's very, very good. She's a star. Her career is going to go on for a while.
Yeah, and I really like kind of the slightly kind of awkward, but still, you know, self-assured 17-year-old teenage young woman that she is, the character that MJ is. You know, I like her take on it. You know, we've seen kind of Kirsten Dunst's version of MJ and how she played her, which is very kind of very comic booky. But Zendaya's take on MJ stays true to that in terms of like, you know, she's the girl next door, but she's also, she's definitely, you know, she's a 17-year-old who exists in 2018. That's how kind of, you know, a self-assured kind of woman was raised.
And she's not like this popular, I mean, MJ was never a popular girl. She was the weird one of the school. And I feel like it's more true to the comics than Kirsten Dunst's MJ was. She was like boyfriend with Gwen Stacy was the popular one in the comics. And like Kirsten Dunst in the Kirsten Dunst, like Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire movies, they kind of smashed Gwen Stacy and MJ together to make what they made as MJ in those movies, I think. And they eventually had Gwen Stacy, but like she was kind of just shoehorned in there.
We don't really want to talk about the mess that Spider-Man 3 was.
Spider-Man 3 is a
mess.
Yes. But yeah, on the whole, I enjoyed it. I liked how, I mean, I have friends who have said on multiple occasions, we've talked about it before, Marvel can do, how to, you know, how does Marvel, they're going to make these huge epic 17 character movies where the universe is coming into an end. And then 2 months later, they release, you know, a Spider-Man movie that feels, it's much smaller, where it's just the stakes are smaller, blah, blah, blah. How can Marvel think
much
that
smaller
gonna,
state? Yeah.
But at the same time,
they got to like dial it back a little bit, you know?
Well, and I think it worked. I mean, they released Ant-Man and the Wasp right after Infinity War, like 2 months after Infinity War. And that movie was really fun. And you didn't feel like, well, I should have, well, I wanted Endgame before, you know, Infinity, you know, they, why are they giving me this movie when all we want to know is what happened? Because if you do it well and the characters are entertaining and you stick with the tone that generally works in Marvel movies, people are going to go see it. And it's Spider-Man, and it's Spider-Man done well. People love it.
Dude, it's made over $1 billion. It's a hit.
Christopher, what did you think? I mean, you're the Spider-Man guy here.
Yeah, I really liked it. I think it's undermined by knowledge of if you had comic book knowledge of Mysterio, it didn't help the movie.
You saw it coming. You saw it coming. Yes, for sure.
So I had all of that sort of years and years of reading Spider-Man and. I knew what Mysterio was.
You just never trust the guy. Yeah. You never trust him. Right. But he's so good.
Great character. I love the tech that they developed, and I loved all of that. That was really cool.
I bought into it. You accept it.
And I loved the really smart sort of twist and reveal at the end.
The after credit scene.
It complicates Peter Parker's life a lot.
The two after credit scenes were like big changes.
Fantastic.
For Spider-Man's life. Like you have those.
And it's we take this for granted all the time, right? But I still marvel at how much progress movie technology. We just take for granted that Spider-Man is fighting a water monster in Venice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you are never broken from the movie. Like the years pass, we're always like taken out of it. It's like, oh wow, that looks really fake.
Mm-hmm.
They've done such a good job of improving the tech you're never like taken out of the experience. And that's what they've really figured out, is they've mastered that movie going experience where you are immersed and you're never removed from that. And I love the fact that they really pay attention to that experience and pull it off. And the fact that they do that, and it's a high school trip, European trip movie on top of all of that, is hilarious to me. And I loved all the love story with his friend, who they get together during the trip and then they break up at the end of the trip. It's all awesome.
Which is so high school.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's entertaining film. It doesn't try to be anything that it's not.
I
love the first like 5 minutes where it's like a high school kid made a video of like
the YouTube of the memoriam, because that would be what Peter Parker would do.
Yeah. Like some teenage kid made like a video for the high school.
Put it up on YouTube.
And they like explained the weirdness of like everybody who came back. I love that shot. It's just this one moment where the marching band is during a school thing is practicing, and then half of them disappear. Mm-hmm. And then they show video of them coming back, like, and they're still playing. Like stuff like that is like really smart and really interesting parts of this movie. It's the little details, but
I love it because they're just, they do it with a wink and a nod. They're just like, it's a comic book movie. Don't think too hard about this. It's going to be a little bit silly, but this is the world that they live in. And people just have to accept that this is the way things are.
Yeah.
And you know, if you really try to, I mean, if we want to watch a 24-hour drama about the consequences of people vanishing, you know, we can watch The Leftovers. If we're going to watch a movie about a comic book movie about heroes fighting to save us, come watch the MCU, because you're not going to dive into the minutiae. Yeah,
they kind of gloss over like the real repercussions. And
but
like,
I wouldn't even say it's glossing over. Chaos. They're just saying, you know what? This isn't the story that we're telling. We're going to tell a different kind of story, and you can and they do it well enough that you just accept that this is the kind of story it is.
Yep.
Because you can get into the weeds on what it would mean for 4 billion people to vanish. Be gone for 4 years, for 5 years, and then come back.
And they brush up against it, but just go watch The Leftovers if you want that experience. Yeah.
If you want that experience, go watch The Leftovers. Sure. We've recommended that show enough.
We've raved about it. We've raved about it. Go watch it.
Go watch it.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, like I mean, the difference between this movie and like I would say it's kind of like on the same level as Hobbs and Shaw's. But like this succeeded. Like, this is just good, clean fun where I want to watch this again. And I want, but like, honestly, the movie didn't mean much in the grand scheme of things. It was sort of just this small story, which is fine, you know, but I didn't like how I felt about Homecoming. Homecoming was like a perfect movie. And I feel like this movie is not perfect, but I enjoyed watching it. I don't know. I guess I liked it, but not as much as you guys. So
I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't, it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the segment of movies that you may only watch once or twice because they're not the big event movies.
Right.
Just because that's just the nature of what they are. Black Panther is a superior product, but it wasn't like a quote unquote event movie. And I suppose you could say the same thing about, I mean, my favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, Winter Soldier. It's not really an event movie. It introduces a lot of new characters.
Right.
And it's still, I think, the best of all of the movies. But you don't need to watch them multiple times. You don't feel
the
need
to. But they have things in common, which is the best Marvel movies are those that focus on relationships and character development.
Yeah.
And those, Spider-Man will always be the most compelling character for me in the Marvel Universe. And so the Tom Holland examples have been compelling because they're getting it right with him.
I think it's the teenage Spider-Man. The teenage Spider-Man really works. They got it right.
It really works.
So. Yeah,
He's growing up quick, but he still feels young.
Do you make of the reveal, though?
What reveal?
At the end, fact that Peter Parker is outed.
Not that reveal. The other reveal.
What's
Skrulls?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So when did that happen? How long has Nick Fury been the Skrulls?
Been with the Skrulls? Is that what you're talking about?
What I'm saying
is... Or the Skrulls pretending to be Fury.
In which movies have we been seeing Skrulls as Nick Fury instead of Nick Fury?
I don't know.
How long has Nick Fury been up in that ship?
It's a good question.
You know? I mean, that was hilarious.
Is that the implication that you got from it, Christopher? What are you getting from that reveal that affects your understanding of the universe?
That doesn't. I didn't have that question because I think we haven't seen any other Nick Fury as a Skrull except for this movie. I think that he came back. They saved the universe. They defeated Thanos. They defeated Thanos, and then Nick Fury went on a well-deserved vacation.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just told, this one and told them he's been
don't
up
f it up. Don't f it up. We defeated the universe threatening person. Please, I need a break. And so, can you be my stand-in for a little while? Hey, we saved your ass.
Seems now the Skrulls, because of the actions of Captain Marvel are clearly allied with
right.
humanity.
Because those two were definitely from the Captain Marvel movie, right?
Yeah.
So she obviously brought them to Earth.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I don't know what it has. I don't know if we're supposed to overthink it or if it has more serious implications or it's just laying the groundwork for here's the next storyline, which is the war with the Skrulls and the secret war and all of that. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're trying to say that the Skrulls are good guys.
That group of Skrulls is.
There could be. Yeah. There could be very different groups of Skrulls.
There's another group of Skrulls that are assholes. Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. 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 So
yeah,
it's I'll be curious to see how they play that out. It could be just a one-off saying, hey, Fury needed a break and this is how we did it.
And the Skrulls are now our allies.
And it's a funny joke.
It's a funny joke.
It like the comics, they do a lot of like Nick Fury has like duplicates. You know, it's a little
life
bit
model
like that.
Decoys.
Life yes. model decoys. They even say that in one of the movies, I think.
They do.
The
first Avenger. They say it in the first Avenger.
Yep.
But So it's sort of like leaning into that he, like Nick Fury is not necessarily Nick Fury all the time in the comics. He like at any moment you're like, is this Nick Fury?
Yeah, or right.
It gets revealed that it's not. You think it's Nick Fury for six issues, and then they reveal that it's not.
And then he just gets murdered, and it's just a robot. It's fine.
Yeah.
So I like that they did that. But yeah, solid movie. Speaking of Endgame, so it got dropped on digital, so I bought it. And then I watched it with Chris Ryan. He came over. He hadn't seen it. Watching with somebody who like doesn't really know all the movies, hasn't seen all the movies. Like there's definitely a disconnect. Like we have seen all the movies, some of them multiple times. And like, you know, I forget that, like, I know all this shit. I know who everybody is, but he's like, who's that? Who's that? He hadn't seen Captain Marvel. He'd seen Infinity War maybe twice. Like, the scene, spoiler alert, when Captain America picks up Mjolnir, he's like, what? How is that? How can he do that? And then I had to like remind him that like Odin said, you know, whoever be worthy can wield the power of Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, like that comes easy to us, but like you have to know this shit to get all the references. So
oh, yeah. Well, an Endgame, you know, references.
The final movie of the entire cycle is going to assume, and rightfully so,
that you've seen all of them.
You have seen all of the main line, at least.
Yeah.
And so you have knowledge going in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's totally appropriate for Marvel to do that. It's not a one-off movie.
Sure.
It is a culmination movie. So.
But like I bought it on digital and the movie's close to 3 hours and the entire thing is like special features and all that, 7 hours of content.
Wow. That's awesome.
Pretty cool. I haven't watched it all, but there's a tribute to Stan Lee after the movie. That's pretty awesome. Like have like all the
that's what they showed in the re-release. We went to this and saw the re-release theaters, and that the Stan Lee thing was in the theater.
Oh, it's great!
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's really cool. So yeah, I really enjoyed watching it. And now we own it, so
I will be getting it as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Are you gonna buy it on? You're gonna buy it on disc though. You're gonna go digital.
Well, I'm gonna have to check out the special. I love special features, and I love director's commentaries. So whichever
I'll have to decide because I think we have Infinity War in physical. I want them both.
Audio tracks. Here, let me.
I think I want them both in physical. I think those two together. I think I need to get it in Blu-ray.
Yeah. See, I just don't need.
But I'm rarely do I buy a Blu-ray these days. I'm all about digital and not having shit to store or move ever again. So
I kind of like the option to share movies with people.
Yeah.
So I still buy Blu-rays. I mean, it's the same price. So but I like the option. That's why I still kind of buy physical books, because I can share them with people. You know, so I'd still, I don't know which I'll do. I'll probably.
That's a good reason.
Yeah. For sure. So, yeah, I trust people to return stuff. So I like to share. I share things.
No, I don't trust anything.
Yeah.
All right.
Golden Compass.
Should we talk about anything before Golden Compass?
I just want to bring up the thing that I watched called The Boys. It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. They that dropped.
Based on yet another comic book series. I highly recommend that you watch this series.
Not for the kids.
Highly entertaining, and it very is violent. not for children.
No.
There are multiple disclaimers of strong sexual content and graphic violence.
The first episode has a disclaimer for rape.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a dark show.
Dark, fascinating exploration of the a universe where there are superpowered beings. And they are not good. It is a fascinating, complicated examination of how things would play out if superheroes were a weird hybrid of corporate.
Mm.
Marvel Universe actual like existence where they are beholden to corporate interests and making movies based upon their personas and actual real stuff, and also promotional tools.
Yeah,
the depth of it is really fascinating for someone who has grown up reading and loving superheroes and comics and deeply invested in all of that world. It's a great sort of fascinating take on, okay, that's one way to go.
Yeah.
But what if it was this way? And it is fucked up.
Well, I will say this. I did read a few of the first comics of The Boys by Garth Ennis. And Garth Ennis's writing is kind of, it's just kind of mean in places, and that's why I don't like it. Like, it's like Mark Miller's writing too. It's mean writing. But like, what I like about this show is Carl Urban is so watchable, and and you give a shit about him.
Characters are great.
You give a shit about that one main character guy. Like, he's very, very good. I can't remember his character.
Jack name. Quaid, is that the actor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right. But like, everything makes sense. Like,
it's basically
the Justice League, but they're assholes, you know?
Yes,
so everybody's got like it's like the Superman archetype. It's the Wonder Woman archetype. The Aquaman archetype. The Aquaman guy is just an idiot. And it's just like,
And a rapist.
Jesus. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So like they could just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They're beholden to no one.
Yeah. So there's definitely darkness. The treatment of women is rough.
Is rough
in the show. But the arc that the main superhero woman goes through is a fascinating one, and she has a very nice as a character and a in my view powerful arc, and so she has a rough go, but then she realizes that she doesn't have to take any shit from anyone, and so it's good. So I highly, you haven't watched it, but I highly recommend it. The that already season two has been picked up.
Wow.
Yep. And
yeah, I got to finish it. I'm only four.
And it finishes on a great reveal. And so it sets up a season two that could be even
is
more.
Is it, how many episodes is it?
Eight.
Is it eight? It's eight. And it's I'm halfway in.
Streaming on Amazon.
Amazon Prime. Yep.
Yeah, I got to finish that. I got to Hannah and I have been watching that together. We've been like FaceTiming and
nice
doing adorable things together.
Oh, that's so. Hi, Hannah.
We're watching it together. So we got to finish it. So I can't just binge it. I have to wait.
I respect that. I totally respect that. It.
Totally
to
respect.
Honor that commitment.
Because I just I could finish that shit tonight.
Honor that commitment.
I'm honoring
it. Gotta watch it with TGIF, my friend.
I know.
Yep.
All right. Golden Compass. We're going to talk about the end of Golden Compass. This is, I don't know, chapters 16 through 19, something like that.
Yep.
So that's not right. 15 through 19. So if you haven't read Golden Compass or you don't give a shit, turn us off now. Here we go. So what'd you guys think? The end of the book.
Incredible.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
The end of that book is incredible.
Pretty much from when she gets the Bullvanger to like the end is like nonstop going. Every chapter is just action, crazy shit, reveal. She's always in trouble. She's always like, she's now I understand
and
what
she,
you were
but
talking
hold on
about.
Though.
We're, what's
it,
up?
She constant act, but it's not, it doesn't sacrifice any of kind of Lyra's
right.
internal. She really learns that she has to take control of her own destiny.
Right.
And that she literally, it's sad in the sense that she has to, she learns that she can't rely on anyone, that she has really has only herself. That
well, and then you were talking about on the last episode how like you saw Lyra as this liar, and it makes total sense in the last few chapters because she like every adult that she talks to, she lies to save her own life. She tells people their her different name. She tells the professor that she meets in the bear prison that. She's somebody else to get information out
she
of her.
She lies like, to the Bear King.
She lies to the Bear King.
Into...
She lies to, you know, she lies to get what she wants to survive. And it's really interesting. And you find out about Dust, like finally explains that stuff to you. You still don't really know what it is, but
it has a much greater meaning than it. And, you know, its understanding is ongoing as people research this kind of supernatural, the nature of the supernatural that exists in the world and how it all connects us to every other universe that exists.
And then all the witch lore, we learn a lot more about the witches, a lot more about, what else did they like?
Well, and
all the bear stuff's really interesting.
All the bear stuff is great.
Yeah.
We finally get to Lord Asriel so that Lyra can kind of complete her quests of giving him the alethiometer, which has been her kind of, you know, she needs to get to him. She needs to get him free. She needs to get him this thing. And
is he able to read it? She's able to read it.
She has become through practice. She has been able to learn how to read the alethiometer very well to the point where she can she can almost tell the future at this point.
Well, and then she knows where she's like omniscient with this thing, you know,
basically.
She's sitting in the prison and she's like, is he alive? Yes. Like, where is he? He's on his way to you. Like,
The information that she can glean from it is only limited to her imagination and ability to frame the question.
Exactly.
Which is like, it's kind of like this weird thing of like, what does this thing do? But by the end of the book, you're like, oh shit, she can know anything she wants. She can know.
She's also like, just a kid.
That's the implication. Yeah.
She's a kid that can know anything she wants. As soon as she's an adult.
Because she's oftentimes not going to be able to And I think she has moments of she doesn't understand the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's being given to her, right? And that's purely because she's a kid. She's and she doesn't have experience, and
she's 12 years old or whatever she is. And
so she her path through sort of learning, I am very much at risk. I am very weak. However, I have power in these areas, and so I'm going to utilize that to the best of my ability. Helps her to survive, but it also leads her to trust Azrael, and ultimately leads to the ultimate betrayal and the transformation of her from, oh wow, I have this singular purpose to find my father, to okay, I need to do this thing. I'm my own person, and holy shit, adults will betray me.
Yeah.
Like Azrael just takes what's his name? Tony.
Roger.
Tony's the other kid. But
He
and spoiler alert.
Mm.
Do we spoil the ending?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Are people reading it? Are you ready for the spoiler?
We warned you.
Yeah.
Azrael kills Roger. To gain the power to open a doorway to the other universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Through the Borealis. Which,
the first time I read that book, I couldn't believe that
this is this her character, father. This is like went father, supposed to be a good guy.
I could not believe that he had done that. And the way it's written, the way it it's just such a powerful ending.
Yep.
And her reaction is spot on. The writing is so good and beautiful. I love this book so much. It is so well written and it's such a really tight good. Story it's, and complicated. And the next two books are even better. I'm telling you guys, you got to read them.
All right.
I don't know what we're going to do for the next Brothers Geek book club, but should we do the next book, The Subtle Knife? Or should we change it up?
I say yes. We should read all three.
All right. I'm down.
Read all three. Boom. Yep. Going for it.
Subtle Knife is the next book, kids.
I think so. I think we're doing it. Well, and the very end, Lyra steps through the portal. She goes to the other world.
Yep. She has no idea where it goes.
You have no idea where she ends up.
Yeah. Yes. She has no idea where she's going. She just knows that it's not where her mother and her father is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the book, Azrael and Mrs. Coulter are reunited. And it seems as though they're going to resume their relationship.
Those two are so effed.
Freaking bonkers, right?
He's like kissing her, but like his like cat is like attacking,
not
her,
happy
her
about
ape?
It. It's really it's fascinating how that tension and complicated emotions are portrayed with the demons, right? It's just an amazing idea and complicated sort of explanation. And the way that I just love that. I just love
I love the lore. All the lore stuff is really interesting too. Like even him, like he's reading the Bible to her, explaining to her about dust and how the added stuff of like the demons
it's funny. It's their version. That universe's version.
Yes. Very similar to ours. It has overlap.
Oh, of course.
There's
subtle variations.
Like, the demon stuff is different and the dust stuff is different. And it's like, there's hints that like this stuff has been around a lot longer and they're just finally discovering it. Like this is like a solid part of they equated it to like particles, like stuff that's part of the natural order.
Yeah.
I think is really interesting. Well, all that stuff is super well, dude, it's so well written.
It's so well realized in terms of the quote unquote rules that this author that this novelist has created for the world where the story takes place. It's a children's book, and it's kind of designed for, I mean, it tells a children's story, but I think we understand it. The best books are the ones that respect the readers, obviously, mm-hmm. and respect the intelligence of the readers, just like Rowling does with the Harry Potter books and the complexity that evolves over those books. The complexity that's being told to us in this book is on the same level as that, if not more so.
Right.
In terms of the characters, I mean, no one is evil. There's cruelty, and then there's kind of mercy going on, and yeah, there's agendas versus
there's selfishness.
There's no white hats and black hats. There are people there are people who either they care about Lyra in different ways. Because I think that Asriel loves Lyra in his own way.
And well,
I think
Coulter does as well. And like Mrs. Coulter even like saves her from being severed from
exactly.
Yep.
Like she saves her from that, but she's doing it to all these other kids. So it's like, I don't know. It's complicated. It's weird.
It's complicated and murky, and the morality is not straightforward at
murky
all.
Murky is right.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad. The problem that I had is only with myself entirely, because I knew kind of where the ending was going. The crappy movie that came out like 15 years ago, they totally redid the ending to make it happier. Like they made the movie with the ending of the book.
Well they didn't even show like.
Well, they don't even get to Asriel by the end of the movie.
Fight.
Stupid.
It's stupid. They needed it to be more quote unquote, you know, happy and have it
Disney.
Kind of Disney-esque ending, which
ruined the movie. We know HBO is going to dial this thing to 11.
I am hoping that all the complexity and moral ambiguity and kind of dark, really kind of dark, traumatic parts that exist in this book and this story, because Lyra is traumatized throughout this entire book. That's just the reality. Yeah. The sadness that she experienced, the deep, visceral fear and sadness that she experiences when she learns about what they're doing to the other children. That is some of the best writing in the entire story.
Oh yeah, when that kid that she finds in that hut, like,
yeah,
clutching the fish, and then the kid ends up dying, and then like they take the fish away, and she's like yelling at these adults about why did you take his fish away? I was just like, damn,
it goes there, and you get, you're right there with her, and she, it's incredible writing.
It's really good.
Yeah. And, so I'm totally
like,
on board.
Listening to it too. Like,
I downloaded it. That was the other thing I was going to say. I downloaded the audiobook.
It's so good.
It's so good. The different character voices and everything.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I was looking at the IMDb of His Dark Materials, which I still don't have any idea when that's coming out. Do we know when that's coming out?
I think it's beginning of 2020.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we still got a while. But, I was looking up all the characters because all I have to picture the characters in my head is that crappy movie. So I'm trying to like picture the new guys as I'm listening, trying to picture, you know, the new Lyra, the new Lord Asriel, like all that stuff. So really, really good.
The trailer
stuff,
helps with that. The trailer definitely helps.
It does. Mm-hmm. So
really well. Really well done book. Really well done.
And we're reading it.
So we're gonna. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many chapters there are on that one, but let's say next time read the first five.
Sure.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Start with that. And then we'll figure out how many chapters it is, and we'll break it up a little bit. But first five for
the next episode.
I love it, Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you have any trivia for us?
I do. Yay. And there's a little bit of context with this trivia. So Ashton and I went to Harry Potter trivia at a bar in Phoenix a couple nights ago.
Sure.
Last week got crushed because the questions were very hard.
Yeah.
We did well in some areas. We did less so in other areas. And it was book trivia. It was not movie trivia.
Yeah.
So it's been years since I've read the books, and I don't know if Ashton has actually ever read the books. So she could help in some ways, because, you know, if it was the same as the books, sure, as the movies, sure, then, but there were some very glaring differences between the books.
Ooh, are you going to give us ones that you missed? Are you going to give us
no,
ones that
you but I'm going to give you the level of,
okay,
it's Harry Potter themed, and these are how damn hard the questions were.
Sure.
Here's your question. In order they were taught, who were the six defense against the dark arts professors who taught Harry at Hogwarts?
Oh my God.
In order that they taught.
Yeah. There are six names.
Quirrell. Season was the first book.
Yep.
First book. It's not, Lupin was number three. So who is it was Kenneth Branagh.
What was his name? Professor.
I'll come back to that one. Lupin was number three. Number four was Mad-Eye Moody.
Faux Mad-Eye Moody. Yep.
Five was Crazy Lady working for the Magisterium.
Mystery of Magic. That was a geek bleed.
That was a fascinating geek bleed, because that was between geek worlds.
That was awesome.
Geek bleed. Wow. Geek bleed.
I love it. Trademarked.
I own the website. I do.
He's gotta start writing these down and putting them on that website.
That was good.
Okay, so where were we at? What was that lady's name?
I'm blanking
hard on her.
Kira would know.
Kira would know.
Yeah. Star was an S.
And then it was
book
Snape.
Six.
Book six was who?
Snape.
Okay. So you have Quirrell, which is year one. You have Lupin, who is year three. Mad-Eye Moody, who is year four. And you have Lupin, and you have Snape, who is year six.
So we're missing
year two. You need year two and you need year four.
I can think of this.
Or year five.
Two was Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Give me a second.
If you're looking it up, I'm going to
reach through. Don't
look it up. I've got my eyes closed. I'm looking at
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I don't have it.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have it.
Yeah. Go.
Year one was Quirrell. Year two, Gilderoy Lockhart. Year three, Lupin. Year four, Moody. Year five, Umbridge. Year six, Snape.
Yeah, I could picture.
Now you
did pretty well, actually.
You did pretty well.
Yeah,
it was all or nothing. Those are the kind of questions we were getting.
All or nothing.
Damn, that's hard.
They don't even give you partial credit?
Nope, no partial credit.
Did they give you the names, or you had to name them?
Yeah, and come up with it. These are tough trivia nights
put it up? You like type the name in kind of stuff?
You wrote it down and then you changed, exchanged papers with other teams playing and graded each other.
I have a regular team that I go to bar trivia with, Chris Ryan, Christian, and Laura. And we went to bar trivia last week and we won.
Nice.
We're ballers.
I don't go to general trivia night. I don't go to general bar trivia nights. I like themed. They're just more fun. But yeah, I mean, when you go to
the one theme that I go to,
people are dressed up. People are like, yeah, it's pretty fun.
Mm.
The one themed one that we go to is Christian, Laura, and I go to the movie one that's once a month, and that is hard.
Yeah.
Like, it is not effing around. And that's when we go, that's in a movie theater, and there are like 30 teams. And I mean, the best I think we've ever done that I've ever seen is like third, but it's like hard. It's like real hard.
Fun.
Last time we got sixth out of 30 teams.
Wow. So,
I mean,
you're doing pretty well.
We're doing pretty good, but we don't win. But Anyways, if you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the podcast with questions, comments, things you want us to discuss, anything. BrothersGeekPodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Brothers_Geek@twitter.com. Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook and BrothersGeek.com for all your episodes. And we're on Spotify and we're on iTunes, so go follow us there.
Be curious.